Broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. The Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Previously recorded with Mark as the host of The Mark Kohler Show.
Enjoy this fresh take on strategies to better live the American dream.
Welcome, everybody, to today's show. My name is Mark Kohler, your host, and broadcasting live by myself, Mark Kohler, today. Matt Sorensen is speaking in Washington, D.C. He got the call to go east. I got the call to go west, but I'm calling from our Hawaii office. Now, I know before some of you think, for me, it's a tough job coming to the Hawaii office. It's not something that I wanted to do. You know, our firm, we thought, We give back to our clients and set up a Hawaii office so you, my friends, can get a tax write-off when you visit Hawaii and come visit our accounting team over here. Have a little workshop, attend one of our business club meetings over here. It's a sacrifice. We, you know, Matt and Liddell and I, we were debating, should we set up our office in Duluth, Minnesota, or Honolulu, and it was a close call, and I'm sorry to my clients over in Minnesota, but we went with Hawaii. We wanted to just give back. It's a sacrifice, but call me a giver. You know, it's just, we did it for you guys. So I'm over here roughing it out in the Honolulu office and excited to be here with you today. And I love my Hawaii clients. They're over here. So kind, so wonderful and beautiful people. And let me just say, you know, before you get visions of grandeur, I think I left for the office when it was dark yesterday, and I got home about 20 minutes before I could even surf at all. It was miserable. So I'm working full days around the clock with tax season here, helping our Hawaii clients with the tax deadline and some consults. So anyway, it's not all it's cracked up to be, but it's a beautiful sight out the window right now. Anyway, well, thank you so much for listening. For those that are new to the show, this is a show about saving taxes, protecting your wealth. Better living that American dream. And normally I have Matt Sorensen, my co-host, here with me, but again, he's in Washington, D.C., speaking at the RITA conference, getting an update on self-directed IRA issues with the premier self-directed retirement association in the country. And Matt's one of their keynote speakers, too. So he's already written an article today that hopefully many of you caught in the newsletter with some updates. He wrote it while he was in D.C. yesterday and posted it to his blog. So please check that out in the newsletter. For those that are self-directing your 401k or IRA, always good to get new cutting-edge info, and Matt Sorensen is getting it for all of us. So really, really exciting. Now, before we jump into our tax and legal tips, and we've got a lot to talk about today, we've got a couple special guests. I'm really excited about this topic about contractors and subcontractors and how to not just get taken advantage of or make poor decisions and get into some. We've just had some clients that have got into some nightmare situations with subcontractors recently. And it's not that the subcontractors are bad either. It's just a poor consummation of the relationship. You've got to come together properly. So anyway, we're going to talk about that and more. And before we get there, let's hit some of our tax deadlines. We've got some important tax deadlines coming up, obviously. It's March, and so April 15th is right around the corner. It's no surprise that your personal returns are due. File an extension if you would like. There's no problem filing an extension. You actually reduce your chances of an audit. It gives you time to prepare your paperwork. I'd say probably 60% of our clients extend their tax returns. We have a little waiting list right now, so if some of you are wanting to join our firm, you can file an extension, get on our waiting list. We would anticipate being able to take care of you in the summer. My tax return is always the last one done on October 14th. Maybe Liddell, my partner's, has done a little bit before, after. We'll ask him. She's coming on here shortly with a tip for us. Spending is okay, folks. Don't stress about it. Get it done right. That's what matters most. Now, let me mention two other important tips. Now, these are really, really important tax tips. The first one is your health savings account contribution. If any of you had a high deductible health insurance plan last year, you have until April 15th to make a contribution for 2014 and get the write-off for your 2014 tax return. The money goes into your health savings account. You can turn around and reimburse yourself for expenses you may have incurred even last year and future health care expenses, or let the money grow, invest it, self-direct it. Oh, so much you can do with it. But in 3 weeks, the deadline has passed, and the contribution is $3,300 for a single individual, or $6,550. That's $6,550 for a married or family. So make sure you get your health savings account contribution in, funnel it through your account, and reimburse yourself for some medical for last year if you had a qualifying plan. Now, you can research this, talk about it with your advisor. I've got, this is a chapter in my book. It's, I can't count how many blog articles and webinars are on this topic. If you really want to get an hour and a half of great content, please subscribe to my webinar series. It's only $20, and you get 12 different webinars, and one of them is exclusively on healthcare. And you'll get all the information you need to get up to speed on the health savings account or health reimbursement arrangement. So think about those. Next deadline, I just want to point out, is the Roth or IRA contribution deadline, April 15th, to take a contribution deduction for make a contribution to a Roth, take a deduction for an IRA. Of course, there's income limits and all that good stuff, but run the numbers, see if you can make a contribution by April 15th. Now, here's the trick. For those of you that own a small business, you could create a SEP. It's kind of like a glorified IRA. If it's based on your earned income in your S-Corp salary or your sole proprietorship. It won't work for an LLC with rentals, but if you have some ordinary income and a small business structure, you can do a SEP, which is pretty darn good. It's kind of a fix it, I screwed up and should have done a 401k plan. That's the long term for it. But you can at least make a contribution to a SEP up until your extension deadline. So extend, work on making a SEP contribution, take the write-off for 2014, then what we love to see you do is roll that SEP into the 401k you should have had before year end. Then with the 401k, you can put away more money with less FICA cost. They're so much better than a SEP. But again, if you didn't have a 401k last year, the SEP is a great way to get an IRA contribution in and not worry about those pesky deadline on April 15th for a regular IRA. Deadlines, check out the newsletter. Today, as usual, for those that are new listeners, please go to any of our business websites or my personal site, Matt Sorensen's Self-Directed IRA Handbook site. If you're listening today, you know where to get us. I'll give you my site, which leads you to all the different sites from one location, and that's markjkohler.com. Mark, J as in Jolly, Kohler, K-O-H-L-E-R.com. Sign up for the newsletter and get that important info each week. There's a couple videos in there. I would love to see you check that out. I did a video on real estate professional classification. Nice little info on that. I've had several consults on that this week. In fact, it's kind of ironic. And I guess the last announcement is this coming Saturday, we have our live event in Irvine, California. It's the Real Estate and Tax Summit. It is going to be phenomenal. I'm giving a two-hour presentation on the 2015 tax tips. Matt Sorensen's doing a two-hour update on creative IRA strategies. And then Kendall Stock is doing 2 hours on where to invest in real estate this year and how to rehab and fix and flip and take the tax strategies we talked about in the morning and apply them. You can watch it live from your computer, get a recording of it for $99, or please come attend in person. We're having a lunch panel. Lunch is included. It's at the Irvine Marriott. The links are on the newsletter. Call our office if you'd like to get there. So, boy, a few important notes there, but hope that we can see you this weekend, even if it's through the computer screen on our live web broadcast. So check out that link. It's retsummit.com, R-E-T-Summit, S-U-M-M-I-T.com. Well, without any further ado, we're going to have our regular tipster. This year, it's been fantastic to have him about every 3 weeks. He's always so busy, but he's gracious to spend some time, especially during tax season, with us. So without any further ado, we're going to bring out Liddell Ayer, partner of Kohler & Ayer, K&E CPAs. and leading the team back there in the trenches in the throes of tax season, Liddell. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks, Mark. You woke me up. Good to be on.
Woke you up, and it's 8 a.m. over here in Hawaii, so it, you know, I had to get up at 5:30 to get me to run around here and run some errands and then get here. So,
no, I was just kidding. We're going strong here this morning.
Yeah. And is it snowing out there? I heard it's snowing in Utah today.
Not in southern
That's
Utah.
Northern.
Hmm. Nope, we're okay
gotcha.
Today.
Okay. Well, before we get to our tax strategy, let me ask, how's your bracket coming? And I already know, so I'm giving you a lead in here to just do some bragging. So I'm just going to ask, how's your bracket coming, Liddell?
Well, you want me to brag and say I'm sitting on the top of the Kohler and Air bracketology?
Feel free. I teed it up for you.
All right. Yep. I am sitting at the top, number one position, most points still possible. Go Arizona.
Now, I have to look at my – I think I have a most – I have a lot of points possible. I'm just a few paces behind you, you know. All my grade eight are in the hunt. So I haven't lost any of my grade eight or final four either. So watch out, bud.
Yeah, you're in the hunt. I know. And you don't. We don't have the same winner in the end, I don't think.
Nope. So as long as Kentucky loses, we'll both be sitting pretty. So
yes, so we're both rooting for Kentucky to lose.
That's right. Sorry, my Kentucky fans. And I just spent, I just shot myself in the foot. 2 weeks ago, I had the honor of going down into Kentucky and do a entrepreneur workshop. And it was blue country, I'll tell you that. And so I had to bite my tongue when it came to Kentucky Wildcats. But now it's all love and, you know, fair and love and war and your 64 brackets. So I'm sorry, Kentucky. I need you to go down. So, hey, what do you got for us on the tax tip today?
Well, what I want to talk today about is I came across an article, and it has to do with a child buying a parent's home and renting it back to them. Now, a lot of us, well, my parents are deceased, but some of us are getting up there to where we have older parents, you know, their homes are probably paid off, or even if they're not paid off, they're probably paid down to where they're not getting a lot of interest deduction, maybe they're not able to itemize, really not getting a lot of tax benefit out of it, maybe they're on, you know, Social Security income and just a little bit of retirement income, and they're not paying a lot of tax anyway, so they're not getting a break for that home. For the ownership of the home. And one strategy you can use is for the child, which would be like us, you know, somebody in their mid-40s, you know, you could go buy that home from your parents and rent it back to them. And what it does, maybe your parents need that cash, you know, maybe they just, you know, at the point in their life where they want some cash and they don't want to have to refinance and they don't want to dip into a home equity, or maybe they want to invest in something else that's a little more, I guess you'd want to say not as risky possibly as real estate. Maybe they want to get in something a little less risky investment. And so they could take that cash that they get from the sale of the home. And I'm sure they've lived in, you know, they've probably lived there in a lot of years. So there's tax-free benefits from the sale of the home. And on your side, you could rent it back to them, be able to take all the deductions. You'd be able to depreciate it, take, you know, utilities, maintenance, insurance, repairs, those sorts of things when you lease it back to them. And another possible option is, you know, when you travel to see them, you're traveling to see your rental property. You know, maybe not all the time, but some of the you could probably get that benefit a couple of times a year.
Liddell, I love this. You know, I over here in Hawaii this week, I've had an opportunity to give a couple workshops, and I literally had several people come up and go, Mark, is your team talking about the same stuff you are? I want to make sure you're all on the same page. And I hope some of you that asked me that are listening today, because I love what you're talking about. This is stuff that I love to mention, the travel strategy back to your rental properties. Liddell, this is an awesome topic. And let me throw this too. I mean, there's really so many benefits. You've already rattled off probably five or six, but it's a great time to harvest the sale of home exemption. Mom and dad can sell you the home tax-free And if they need to get some long-term care, this is another way to create a stream of income to cover long-term care. And in 2 to 3 years, maybe even get them qualified for Medicaid because that home is off their asset list.
Right. That could get them, I think it's a 5-year wait now, like a 60-month possibly. I'm not that adept in Medicare rules,
right.
But it is a...
Yeah.
So it does give them the ability to get that asset out of their name and, you know, gives them access to cash and maybe they can go make some money, you know, on some nice, safe investments that will more than cover what the rent they have to pay you. You're going to want to do it legitimately. You're going to want to get an appraisal done and some of those kind of things. So, and you want to charge them a fair market value rent. You know, you can do a little reduced fair market value rent. I think the courts have allowed something like 20%. Up to 20% less fair market value rent. But, you know, you're going to want to charge just like you would any third party. And then, you know, if they move into long-term care, you're sitting there with an asset that's been paid down and you can either continue to rent it to another tenant or you can go and sell it and 1031 into another property that's closer to your place that you could watch over, you know, more readily, those kind of things. So there's some benefits to it on both sides. Mom and dad aren't getting a real tax benefit out of it, and you could use the tax benefit. And so it's a pretty good strategy.
It is, and, you know, one other side note, some people say, well, Mark, if mom and dad can't pay rent, and it's awkward, grandma, you know, grandpa don't maybe want to be paying rent to their kids, you can gift the rent, but make sure you claim the rent on your tax return. So that can be a really nice benefit to have a paper transaction where you don't actually have to collect it as long as you claim the rent.
Right. Yeah, and they should have the income. You know, you're going to give them money. You're going to buy the house from them, so they could take $200,000 or whatever and put it in investments and get a – you know, you say they got a 10% return, there's $20,000 a year coming in from that investment.
And don't forget about the asset protection benefit. If mom and dad are still trying to drive and they've got and you're worried about a potential lawsuit there and losing the home, when you purchase the home for mom and dad, you can pop it into an LLC, create an extra layer of protection as well. So many benefits. I'm really glad you bring this up, Adele. It's a great topic for those people that have elderly parents.
Yeah, and we all get there at some point.
Yeah. Well, Liddell, thank you for your tip today, folks. Again, Liddell Ayer at K&E CPAs on the top of the bracket at the firm with, this is a pretty hefty bracket. We're looking at 30 to 40 entries. So, I mean, not too shabby, Liddell, got to tell you.
Yeah, there's 39 entries, so we're all right.
And let me just point out, my daughter Molly, who's 11 years old, is in third place. So take that for what it's worth. So if you feel good about that, Liddell.
Hey, that's all right.
All right. Hey, thanks, Liddell. Oh, great tip. And folks, if you need to get a hold of Liddell, of course, their website links are all there, right through markjkohler.com. And after April 15th. It's a good time to make an appointment with Liddell. Give him a few weeks. Thanks, Liddell.
Thanks.
All right. Well, folks, we're going to jump over to our next topic here today. We're power-packed with information. We've got a couple special guests joining us. But right now, we've got Lee Chen, an attorney in our Irvine office. A consummate business planner, litigator. This is where all of us get to dream of going to court. We kind of live vicariously through Lee Chen. And so we've invited him on the show today to talk about contractor-subcontractor relationship when we are rehabbing or fixing up our rentals and all the problems we can run into. So this is a really, really important topic. And we've got a guy that's working on both ends of the spectrum, one in the planning stage, and he's also even got some cases in court right now fighting out some subcontractor disputes. And so it's really nice to have someone with this skill set join us. So, Lee, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mark. It's great to be on, and a good early morning to you.
Yes, thank you so much. I appreciate that. And how's your bracket coming? Did you fill out a bracket this year? Am I taking your $5 or $10 or not?
No, I was busy trying to justify my team, UCLA, even being in the tournament, so I didn't have time to really look into it. So.
And now they're in the Sweet 16. You blew it. So you could have had a shot.
Yeah, yeah, of course. It always happens the opposite of what you intend. So.
Yep. Well, let's jump right into it. So on the contractor issue, we've got an article coming out next week in the newsletter with several tips on hiring a subcontractor. We're going to take some of our conversation today and even bolster that blog article even further. So if you're listening on the podcast, there's a good chance if you're a week late listening to this podcast, the article will already be up on my blog. It'll be co-written by Lee and myself. So there'll be some written material to follow this up. But I don't know if there's any particular order to tackle this issue, but Lee, I have you start rattling off some of your tips here. Let's set the stage. Again, this could be your average investor, like many of you listening to the show today. You may have a day job. You may be a full-time investor. You may be retired. You may just be dabbling in a little bit of real estate on the side. It could be rental property, or it could be a rehab, and you're fixing up that home down the street to flip. It could even be your own home, and you're having a subcontractor come in to work on your house. In every one of those situations, you're going to be doing business with someone where there's a lot of moving parts, that subcontractor relationship. And there's a lot of great contractors out there. And like any industry, there's some bad apples too. And if you're not careful, you can end up losing far, far more than you expected spending on the investment itself, and even completely destroy the project. With, I know, Lee, you're in some lawsuits that we can't even share here on the show that are ongoing right now that are on this very, very topic. So a very, very time-sensitive issue for all of us. Lee, throw out your top tip. I mean, again, we're going to go probably rattle through five or six of these, if not more. But what's number one on your list when it comes to getting a subcontractor in on your project?
Well, I think, I mean, to be very general, I think you have to, you know, number one, do your due diligence, of course, you know, as with everything. But really, you want to have a conversation with the contractor and get some information from them. You know, like you said, there are plenty of honest, ethical, professional contractors out there that do dot their I's and cross their T's. And, you know, I know, I mean, I hire contractors all the time. And, you know, for some people, it may be uncomfortable for them to be, you know, grilling their contractor for this and that, the other. But you got to understand that, you know, these contractors, they do this every day. They talk to homeowners every day. And a lot of them, if they are ethical, if they are professional, they want you to ask them. They want to show you, hey, I have, you know, all of these credentials and I've met all of these requirements and everything. So the first thing is don't be afraid to ask your contractor questions, because that's really how you're going to get a sense to see, you know, are they professional? Can they do their job? Are they explaining what they're going to do to, you know, for my property in a way that makes sense to me? That really gives you a sense of, who you're dealing with and their professionalism.
I like it. And we're going to move quickly through these tips. I mean, folks, as you know, we could be 10 to 20 minutes on each one of these topics and take calls. And this is a lot. So I'm going to be taking notes on the checklist here and then adding these to our blog article where they may need, where it needs to be. But let me just add to this. When I was in Riverside at a workshop just 10 days ago, it was interesting. I had one of the students say, Mark, of course, as a woman, when I'm out there talking to subcontractors, they're ready to go. They want to get started. We can take this. Write me a check. And then as soon as I start drilling that subcontractor on, okay, let's talk about the contract. Let's talk about progress payments. What was one of your most recent projects that I could go look at? Where have you been doing your work? You know, just drilling the contractor. She goes, it's really interesting to say, that all of a sudden the guy's tone changes. Oh, well, yeah, well, we're going to be out 2 to 3 weeks. We may not be a good fit for you if you're in a hurry. Of course, he was totally in a hurry a minute ago to take your check. But now that you're asking for documentation and doing your due diligence, you can really quickly get a sense of which of these contractors, they're going to feel uncomfortable because they don't want to go through that process. That's a contractor you don't want to work with.
Exactly, Mark, and that's exactly why you need to have that conversation before you start writing checks and before you let them in your house, et cetera.
Yep. Okay, number two on your list.
So, you know, there's a lot, especially with contractors, there's a lot of homework that you can do before you even make that first call. You know, if you don't have someone that you're working with, you know, my goal is usually to get, you know, probably three or four people that I'm going to call. Okay, and these three or four people have to meet certain requirements. Okay, so the first thing I'm going to go is check out their licensing. Okay, most states have the licensing status of their contractors on the web. Okay, so check your state licensing board. Check their license. See if they are bonded. See if they, you know, if they say they have employees, do they have workers' comp insurance? One thing that I also check, go ahead.
Oh, let me just add to this. Okay, now I think you highlighted this in a previous article of yours, that, and I apologize for keeping this basic, but number two is get multiple bids. I think that's something you had said before. So, and this relates right to it. So you're going to want to get multiple bids as you're discussing it with these contractors. And then I like what you said is start writing down that information on each one of these bids. Because I think it's hard to just start going through the phone book and looking up info on people. Maybe just call out your people, and when they show up, how many times, I mean, seriously, listeners, how many times have you called a contractor, yeah, I'll come over and bid it, and they never show up? So I think I don't know if I'm going to do any homework before I get at least a bid and have a conversation with someone. But I think, Lee, you said this before, get multiple bids. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah. Well, that's really on a price issue, but also – you know, have them justify, you know, how, you know, if their bid is, you know, a little bit high on, you know, compared to the other two bids, well, have them explain it. Or if it's a little bit too low, you know, there's some questions that need to be answered there. So, that's a way that you can compare not just their price, but their opinions in terms of what
yep.
they propose to do, what type of materials are they going to use. You know, use the opinions that you get from one contractor so that you can talk intelligently with another contractor. That'll get you more informed so you can make that informed decision.
I like it. And then that leads right into number three. If we broke your initial comment into two parts, is that once you start getting those bids and you're having those conversations, it's time to go look these people up on the web and ask them for their license, their bonding, their insurance, workers' comp. I want to ask this. Is that easy information to get on the web, or is it some of those items do you need to ask the contractor to show certification or present some sort of documentation?
Well, it depends on the state. I mean, you know, some states are harder to find that information. I think Georgia is one that's a little bit more difficult to find. California, you know, one thing that, about California with contractors, there is so much information on the Contractors Board website in terms of the contractors, in terms of information. I mean, I would say even if you don't live in California, if you're going to hire contractors regularly, you should go check the California website because there's a lot of great tips. There's forms. You know, they got pamphlets. It's really a great resource even if you don't live in California.
And that's the California Contractor Board site.
Yes, it's cslb.ca.gov.
Let's repeat that slowly for everybody. Repeat that slowly for everybody again.
It's cslb.ca.gov for Contractor State Licensing Board. And if you go on that website, and a lot of these states have this, they'll have, you know, the licensing of the contractor and what subcategory license are they? You know, are they a general contractor? Are they a licensed plumber? Are they a licensed flooring person? Heating, you know, they have the sub license as well. So, you know, you can check, you know, how many different specialties are they licensed in? They have bonding information. And if they don't have it on the website, call the state licensing board and ask them about the bonding. And that's really important. You know, I've had to do it before. If your contractor screws up and they're nowhere to be found, you go after the bond.
Yep. Now, here, and quickly here, as we move through the show, and I want to spend our last 20 minutes or so with another special guest on, just this whole business concept and the stress that all this can provide for us. We're going to be reducing our stress at the end of this call, folks. So be patient. But after licensing and bonding, I want to move to number four here, at least on the list that I'm creating based on our conversation, is really this workers' comp issue. I really think it's almost a separate issue altogether, because if you go out and hire that sub and they're bringing people onto your home, business site, rental property, rehab, that are workers paid under the table, they could be undocumented workers, and they get hurt on your property, you got a problem. Explain how this could happen, Lee. I mean, this is really a bad situation that contractors are paying people under the table on your property.
Oh, boy. It sounds like you've seen this before, and I have also. Homeowners call me up, and they said they hired a contractor, and there was maybe some issue. Maybe there was a tree that was there they were trying to cut or something, and maybe there was it wasn't proper supervision, and we had one case, I think, where the one of the workers, cut his hand off with the saw, and it was because there wasn't being proper supervision,
But this was a guy that was paid under the table too.
Right, and so there's all these moving parts here, but this person without a hand, he's going to be looking for some way to get compensated, okay? And if his employer doesn't have the resources to do that, well, then he's going to be looking at you, the homeowner, and saying, look, you hired this guy. You created this situation on the property where it was a danger. And, even if he's totally wrong, he's put you in a bad spot. And, we have people who just pay out settlements just because they want it to go away. So that's where the workers' comp really comes in, because the workers' comp, that would be your first target to go after. And that takes a lot of the pressure off you, off of any insurance that you may have, your homeowner's insurance or anything like that. And that's really why you want to make sure that your contractor, not just workers' comp, but do they have general liability insurance? So those types of issues.
Yep. And folks, it really comes down to this: asking your subcontractor for a workers' comp waiver. And these are documents that come by different terms sometimes. They're going to look differently from state to state. Some of this may be on a website, maybe it won't be. But the bottom line is, you want to tell your contractor, I don't want undocumented workers paid under the table going on my property. And they go, well, that may change your bid. Then fine, change the bid. But I'm only getting bids from people that are legit. So you better be legit or you're not going to be working on my property. And I know some of you out there doing rehabs, you're trying to cut corners and you're trying to save money, and you may be even paying people under the table and trying to slap out 1099s to folks. Be careful. We see it time and time again, and we've got cases right now in our office where people end up getting screwed over because there's an accident or a problem, which brings us to number five. And we're going to leave it at number five today due to time constraints. We'll put some more in our blog article on this. But Lee, boy, gosh, where do you start on the subcontractor agreement, the contract? Oh, give us a little.
Well, a lot. The insurance, the workers' comp. I mean, preferably, I'd like to see that in the contract,
Mm-hmm.
But with the contract, I mean, there's a couple main things. Number one, be as specific as possible as to what's going to be done, materials that are going to be used. You're going to be billed, okay? Instead of saying, well, he's going to do the flooring, in the family room, he's going to install, ceramic tile, made manufactured by this person, includes the grass, all be as specific as possible so that, if there is a dispute as to what was going to be done, you have it in writing as to what specifically was going to be done. And it just helps with the expectations.
Can I just reiterate? I just want to say again,
sure,
how important that is. And this is where this one of my students just the other day in Riverside was saying, as soon as you start telling the contractor, okay, I want to understand the quality of the paint you're using, the quality of the tile, I want to know how much it's going to cost and how many, and you start getting very, very specific, then the contractor that's squirrely and that could have been trying to screw you over, this is where you're going to see their real color shine through. So, but the contract needs to be very, very clear in this. Now, you don't want to make it unbearable for a contractor to work with you, but you've got to be specific so that they're protected and you're protected, because they don't want to get screwed over by you, the homeowner, either. Anyway, you were going to say next, Lee.
Well, we got to talk about money. Okay.
Yeah.
Progress payment. Very important.
That's
yeah.
Huge.
Like in California, the down payment cannot be more than 10% of the total contract price. Okay. And a lot of people don't know that. And they pay half up front, or they pay the whole thing up front. And then that's when they start having problems, when they've already paid. So you really, you don't want to let the payments get far ahead of the work. Okay. And so you want to be in a progress payment issue where, stage one is done, and then you look at it and you review it. And if it looks okay, if there's no dispute, then you pay them. And probably you want to get them to sign off on something saying, okay, well, I also release any liens, for this scope of the work, in exchange for this payment. Because when you write that check, that's when you have the greatest leverage. So if there's any disputes, if you want to make sure you're not going to get, they're not going to come back and, lien your property or something like that, or whatever, that's when you want to be negotiating as to any issues you have with the actual work.
Yep, and I'll just make two last comments, and we're going to need to let you go here, Lee. But we've had many a homeowner or a rehabber or investor that then wants to hold that check over the contractor's head and not pay him timely just to get them to work harder or be a jerk. And folks, that's a real quick way to get a lien placed on your property. Because if that contractor is getting screwed over on payment, they have certain deadlines, and they're going to record a mechanics lien. And once they record a mechanics lien, those aren't easy to get off. And then that puts the contractor back in the driver's seat. And it can get really pissy. So don't think that you're going to be a jerk either in this contract. Be honest, be fair, and make payments when it's due, and just try to make it a win-win relationship, the detail. And I just want to say one more thing, too, and then, Ali, I'll give you the final word, is verbal change orders. If there's one area of dispute I see so often, it's because the homeowner walks in one day and says, oh, that's not the carpet I want. I want you to go with that carpet. And they go, okay, cool. It's going to cost X more dollars. And there's a verbal agreement. And then, of course, 5 days later, there's a verbal misunderstanding. And someone's mad. They're not getting paid enough, or they're paying too much. And because it wasn't a written change order that was handled pursuant to the contract, whenever there's a change in the contract, get it in writing and follow that procedure to the T. Lee, final word.
No, absolutely. And actually, your contract should say that anything that changes in this contract needs to be in a written signed change order. That way, the contractor has to come to you, has to tell you the price, has to tell you what he's going to do, and you have to sign off on it before anything gets changed.
Yeah, absolutely. Excellent, excellent comments, Lee. Folks, if you're in a dispute and you need a nasty letter or just some advice on what to do next, and you're not sure where to turn, please give Lee Chan a call. He's at KKOS Lawyers in the California office obviously, as he's referenced several times, and you can get to him at Lee, L-E-E, at KKOSLawyers.com. So, Lee, thanks for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Anytime, Mark.
All right. Well, folks, we are now have the pleasure of speaking with our next guest today, and our I guess the highlight of our show. Sorry, Lee. No offense. You were great. but we've got Michelle Prince joining us, author of the book Winning in Life Now, wife of 15 years, mother of two, and a speaker around the country on ways to have a happier, more abundant life by overcoming procrastination and overcoming stress. And folks, if anything in our radio show talking about building wealth and deadlines and making sure that you've got your tax strategies in place and buying a parent's home that's passing away, life is full of stress. And if you're trying to better live that American dream, unless you're putting your head in the sand, you're going to have to deal with a little bit of stress. So we've got an expert on here today to talk to us about managing stress, and we're so grateful to have her. Michelle, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Well, are you ready to remodel your kitchen now after you had to listen to all that?
I am, actually. I was already wanting to do that. So
there you go. Well, now you've got a blueprint of what to do and not to do.
Exactly. No, that
well,
was great.
Michelle, thanks so much for being with us. And I guess I wanted to ask you right off the bat, what made you focus on this whole topic of helping people overcome these challenges and overcoming stress, and what brought you as a person to become a kind of an advocate or an expert or guru on this topic?
Well, you know, my story's pretty long, so I'll make it real short. Basically, I was exposed to personal development at a very, very early age. I was blessed to work with Zig Ziglar right out of college, and that really set the stage for me, for my life, for pretty much just my whole mindset on everything. But throughout the course of my life, after leaving Ziglar and going into a different direction, I found myself really unhappy. And wasn't unhappy because I wasn't successful. I, you know, had a great job. I was very successful from the outside looking in. But from the inside out, I just didn't have that passion. And I didn't really feel like I was doing what I was created to do. So it really put me in a place where it made me start asking some questions and, you know, really getting to the heart of, well, what is it I really want to do? What's important to me? And what's holding me back? And one of the things that I always wanted to do was write a book, not to build a business, but just purely to share some things that I knew through the years, things that I learned from Zig Ziglar, and just things that I thought could inspire people. But I didn't do it for years. But once I did, and once I, you know, wrote my book, I launched my book, it actually created an entire business that I do full-time today of speaking and seminars and all the different things I do. It's only because I overcame what was holding me back. I overcame procrastination. I overcame the negative limiting beliefs. And I literally just flipped the switch and started taking massive action. So that long story to say is why I'm so passionate, because, you know, if I can do it, I believe anyone can do it. And I just think that life is too short to be miserable, no matter what you're doing. And whether you own your own business or something else, you got to get to the heart of, what do you really want to do? What's your passion? And I'm passionate about helping people figure that out.
Okay. Well, good, good. Well, maybe share with us, if you could, a couple practical tips. What can I do, Michelle, tomorrow to reduce my stress a little bit in my life with my business and family responsibilities? What's something you would regularly tell someone to help you with?
Well, it's all about clarity, right? And our minds are like a computer, so we don't want to clutter it. We need to keep it real simple. But most of us have a task list that's about 20 things long every single day. So the first thing I would do is simplify. Think out of that whole list, pick only three things you're going to commit to doing that day. Only three. Even if you have 10 you have to get done, only commit to doing three. It does a couple things. One is it sets your mind again. It's simplicity. We can manage that. The other thing is we all love the sense of accomplishment, right? You know, when you complete something on your task list and you scratch it off, that sense of accomplishment is what gives us momentum. So what I always tell people is simplify and only think of the three things you're going to do that day. And make a challenge or challenge yourself to complete at least one of those things before you would normally start your day or long before you would open up email, social media, or something like that. And the reason is again, momentum. If we can do one thing that we, you know, if we can accomplish one of our tasks before we finish our morning coffee, that's going to give you so much more momentum throughout the day. And it's also going to allow you to get more done. Because the reality is you set out to do many things in a day, but how much do you really accomplish?
Very good. That I've heard this many times before. That kind of that post-it planning the night before, pulling out a post-it, making a list. Because it seems like the night before, we always know what we need to do the next day. We're ready to go to bed. We have that quiet clarity of, oh man, there's the most important thing I need to do tomorrow is X. And if I could just do that, oh my gosh, things would be so much better. Then, of course, we wake up in the morning and life hits us like a ton of bricks. It's the email, the phone call, the family issues, the crisis at work, the client that's got a problem. And all of a sudden, I'm trying to, you know, snarf down some lunch and it's 2 o'clock and I haven't even thought about doing what was really the most important thing to do for the day.
That's
I don't know,
exactly
have you ever
right.
had that experience?
Oh, are you kidding? I teach what I know best, and that's why I experience this myself. So it is about that planning. And the other thing I always suggest is, and this is where most people, I lose a lot of people, but whatever time you're getting up in the morning for the next week, just to do it as a challenge, get up 1 hour earlier. And in that hour, do something that you normally don't get done in a day, something that you always intend to, whether that's working out, whether that's reading a book, whether that's, you know, just having some quiet time, whatever it is, give yourself the first hour of the day, and you're going to have so much more to give to everyone else. Most entrepreneurs and most business owners, like myself, usually when that alarm goes off, they are running from the moment they get up to the moment they go to bed. And most of the time, the things that we put on the back burner are the things that are really the most important to us. You know, our family, scheduling date night, or, you know, losing the weight, or whatever that is. It's writing a book. Spend the first hour of your day doing it. And it really does make an enormous impact when you put your own goals first, because everything else will find its way in.
In your book, Winning Now, and the effort we have to try to succeed, and the challenges we have between juggling family and work, how have you best advised your clients and students over the years to find that balance between family and work?
Oh, it's so difficult, and it really goes back to priorities. When I have coaching clients, one of the first things I do is I ask to see their calendar, because no matter what somebody says is their number one priority, your calendar will really tell me. You know, if you say your family is the number one priority, but you're never home, well, then that's really not it. So the first thing is taking a look at, well, where are you spending your time? And if it's not lining up with what you really, truly want in your life, for your personal life, your professional, your career, your finances, your relationships, then there's a disconnect. So I'm a big believer in scheduling everything, and time blocking, which is not allowing anything else into that time block to whatever it is you're working on. Schedule those date nights. You know, I hear so many people that, you know, oh, well, we just, you know, we haven't had a chance to do that, or I don't get to spend as much time with my kids as I used to. Well, did you make it to that networking event yesterday? Did you make it to another thing you didn't want to do? The truth is if something is in our calendar, we're more likely to do it than if it's not. So schedule your workouts. Schedule, you know, time out with girlfriends or, you know, guy friends or whoever that is, because if it's not in the calendar, you'll probably never get it accomplished. It'll be that back burner, I'll get to it someday kind of thing, and we all know how that usually turns out.
That's a great tip. I like that. If you want the balance, you got to schedule it, because really, if you're not scheduling that time, then we're almost in this crisis mode, or this crisis management, where we're not controlling our schedule. The crises are controlling our schedule, and that's never a good place to be in.
Oh, gosh, no. And usually the crises are somebody else's, right? They're not our own. Somebody else's lack of preparation becomes urgent, but it's not really our urgent.
Yeah. Let's talk about procrastination a little bit. That's another that you've really tried to help others with. How do you handle procrastination and overcoming procrastinating, getting done with I don't want to procrastinate anymore. Wait, I was going to come up with a funny pun and I blew it, Michelle. Okay, so tell us what to do.
Well, it's with anything else in life, the first thing is figuring out, why are you really procrastinating? I mean, why are you really, really procrastinating? Most of the time it's going to boil down to fear, whether it be fear of success, fear of failure. But there is this deep-seated fear that typically goes along with procrastination.
Why would we fear success? Like, I've heard that so many times.
Well, you know, in fact, I have a client of mine that we were having this conversation, and she was very, very honest that that was one of her biggest fears was, you know, what happens if this business just explodes? What if I'm traveling? How is that going to change my relationship with my husband? What are my friends going to think of me? How does that change, you know, we like to be comfortable. Yeah, right. And we pit ourselves in this little box of who we think we should be, and it's kind of scary to step out of it. I know for myself I had to, and that was extremely scary because, yeah, the negative thoughts of like, oh, my gosh, what are they going to think? Who do I think I am? You know, but the truth is, you know, the fear is it's not real, really. It's if you're really procrastinating on something that's truly tied to your purpose, to what you're really supposed to be doing, you're not going to procrastinate on it for long because over time you're just going to have this void. And that's what happened to me. Even while I worked in corporate America, I wasn't doing what I knew I was supposed to be doing. And over time, that just starts to wear on you. So figuring out why are you procrastinating, but more importantly, what is it that you really want to accomplish? Most people don't sit down and write those things down. I mean, yeah, a lot of people do New Year's resolutions, but do you really sit down and think about the goals you want for your family, you know, for your finances, for your spouse, all those things? And, you know, when you start, it goes back to what I said on the scheduling. They all tie together. Being productive is overcoming that procrastination, but most of the procrastination is mindset. It's not a lack of implementation.
Yeah, so let's talk about that fear for a little bit, that procrastination. So you're saying procrastination could almost be a form of self-sabotage. I'm nervous, I'm afraid to succeed, and so I'm just going to not do anything. And
absolutely, because think about it. Think of anything you want to do. I use the writing a book example a lot because, you know, that's what I do, and I also help people write books. But let's just use it as that. If you really want to write a book and you're procrastinating on it, it's not a lack of information, right? You can find someone, a mentor, you can get on Google, you can find everything you need to know about writing a book. So it's not a lack of information, right? It's just a lack of implementation. And that implementation is usually tied to our emotions. And that's why it starts with, well, why are you really procrastinating? It's probably not because you can't figure out what to do. Because you can find a way to figure that part out. And I hope that makes sense.
Michelle, are you still there?
I am.
Okay, now I'm going to actually bring Lisa on the line here because we just had a technical snafu possibly. So let me bring our studio. Did we lose Lisa? No, there she is. 1 second. So this is my Robin. Howard Stern has an assistant Robin. I have Lisa. Lisa, hey, did we go silent for everybody or was it just me that dropped off?
I think it might have just been you for a second because I was fine.
So I self-sabotaged my opportunity here, Michelle Prince. That was, you know, I'm trying to succeed here, and I just totally blew it. So, okay, well, we're going to assume. Thank you, Lisa.
You're welcome.
Okay, so apparently everyone in the stratosphere and blogosphere heard your response to self-sabotage except me. So there's some irony there. But I will not make you repeat it for everybody else. no, I love it. So why don't you finish your, at least where you were before I cut you off. I apologize, Michelle.
No, I think I was done in that.
Okay.
We're all good there.
Okay, all right. So procrastination, oh, my gosh. And I love how you again said getting up in the morning, making that list. We also talked about scheduling. And then this procrastination issue. So if I could, you know, back to the stress topic for a minute, as we kind of again try to balance everything in our life and that American dream, how do you think expectations and where we see ourselves, and I know you've written about this too, like we can really create more stress than we need when we've created these expectations where we think we should be and we're not there. And so we're just like a little rat on a treadmill trying to get someplace that maybe we really don't need to be or should be, or we've set up these false expectations. Please tell us about that mindset of what maybe how we can reprogram ourselves a little bit to help reduce stress as well. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, a couple things you said. You know, comparing ourselves to other people is not ever going to be positive, right? And a lot of times, when we set expectations on ourselves, it's compared to what somebody else is doing. So, you know, that in and of itself is a whole conversation because, you know, who's to say really what you should be doing? And then, you know, it's really based on what your goals are and what you want to accomplish, and what's right for one person is definitely not going to be right for you. But the other thing I'll say about stress, and you know, I am not immune to stress. I'm not immune to any of the things I talk about, because it's literally all of us, we're so stressed. Now especially, because there's so much technology, there's so many people coming at you from every direction, wanting you in some way, shape, or form, that's stressful. So what I usually, or what I do for myself for sure, and what I try to teach other people to do, is set boundaries. You know, one of the biggest stresses I think most of us face is our email inbox, maybe it's your social media inbox, whatever it is, where there's just so much coming at you, is setting the boundaries that when you're available, you know, if you are literally responding to emails at 4 a.m. or 2 a.m. because they're there, well, then that's setting an expectation for others that they can literally get in contact with you at any given time, at any hour. So finding out for yourself, what is it that you really want to do? When do you want to be productive? When do you want to be with family? And keeping those boundaries very clear. And I'll give you an example. So I have two boys, and when I started my business, they were both in elementary school, one of them in kindergarten, and now they're in high school and middle school. But I have a very clear boundary with my clients. I am not available evenings and weekends. Unless I'm speaking, I am crystal clear that if I'm your coach and you need me to be available at 8 p.m., then I'm not your coach. I'm not the right person for you, because I'm not going to allow anything to come in the way of my kids' baseball game or soccer game or something like that. And now some people listening to this might think, well, that's crazy, you know, but that's my boundary. That's important to me. And if I had to give that up, I would be a stress case. So thinking about what makes you so stressful, and are you allowing it? Because you can say no.
Yeah, and Michelle, you make a great point, because if some of you out there are like, I want to reach a certain level of success in my business or whatever, and I have to sacrifice nights and weekends, that's fine. Make that choice. But have that reality check of what the cost and benefits are of doing that, making that sort of commitment, and create the boundaries that work for you. And everybody's different.
There's a time and a place for everything, right? You know, in the beginning of the business, absolutely. But as long as the family's on board, and only if family is important, right? So it goes back to what are your priorities, and then develop your calendar around the priorities.
Yeah, well, I love it. Well, here in our last minute or so, Michelle, please tell our listeners how to get more of you. How can they learn more of your tips, your strategies, and what you have to offer? How can people best reach you?
Probably through the website. It's michelleprince.com, and that's Michelle with two L's, M-I-C-H-E-L-L-E, Prince, P-R-I-N-C-E, and or social media. You can find me on social media, too, and I'd love to sing whatever I can to support your listeners.
Well, thanks so much. Well, we sure wish you the best with those two young boys and your priorities, but your stress level is low. There's our wish for you. So,
well, thank you.
Well, Michelle, thanks for joining us. We wish you the best. And folks, get out and get a copy of her book. You can also get it on Amazon, Winning in Life Now, and get to www.michelleprince.com. Michelle, thanks for being with us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Well, and everyone, we want to encourage you again. Please look at your calendar for this coming Saturday for our 2015 Spring Real Estate and Tax Summit. At least catch it live, and you'll get a recording so you can watch it at your convenience afterwards. And we're going to be having vendors there with rental property around the country, even no-money-down rentals that you can cash flow out of your IRA or 401k, or just pull a little LLC together with some family money, and let's make it happen. So lots of good stuff going on this weekend. And may I say, too, I wish the best for all of you with your bracket. If you're enjoying Martin Madden, enjoy the game this weekend. And good luck. May my partner, Liddell, lose. May I win. That's just my prayer today. So at least you live in the dream. Don't give up. And we'll see you next Tuesday here at 11 a.m. Pacific time for another round of the Mark Fuller, Matt Sorensen Show.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.